It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them, right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Decreased deal-making.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for being with us this Friday morning. The economy may be showing some signs of recovery, but we're not seeing it yet when it comes to M&A activity, mergers and acquisitions. A report out this morning shows that the mergers and acquisitions hit a 15-year low in the United States. The big deal here in August was drug company Warner Chilcott buying P&G's prescription drug business for $3 billion. China is picking up the pace of its deal-making. This week it announced plans to boost overseas bets by 10 times. And a good chunk of it could be coming to the United States. From Shanghai, here's Marketplace's Scott Tong.
China's sovereign wealth fund wants to spread up to $50 billion around the world this year. It's hiring Wall Street pros to help it out. The fund has given Morgan Stanley and Blackstone $10 billion to invest.
In the same way that they might hire Fidelity or T. Rowe Price or someone like that to manage U.S. equities for them.
That's Michael McCormack of the Shanghai research firm ZBen Advisors. Rumor has it the Chinese wealth fund also fancies U.S. toxic mortgage assets clogging the balance sheets of American banks and a Hollywood studio. That may bring to mind Japanese investors snapping up Universal Studios in the 80s. It attracted political hostility in the States, and China is trying to be more discreet.
They're going to tread very carefully to make sure that their reputation or the reputation of Chinese investors more broadly isn't damaged by what they do.
Most expect the Chinese wealth fund to invest indirectly, for instance, through Wall Street firms, and to buy non-controlling stakes in companies to avoid political heat. McCormack says the fund's mandate is not political. It's purely to make money. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Checking overseas markets today, the Chinese benchmark slid more than 2.5% today. Other Asian shares closed mixed. Shares in Europe are higher right now. London's FTSE by 1%, Frankfurt and Paris by about 1.5%. Here at home yesterday, a better-than-expected revised GDP kept Wall Street on a winning streak. The S&P added 0.25%. The Dow made it 8 days in a row in the green, rising 37 points to close at 95.80. Yeah, we've heard all about the travails at AIG, but the stock price of the government-bailed-out insurer has more than tripled in the last month. AIG posted its first quarterly profit in 2 years, and now there's talk about some reconciliation with its former leader, giving stocks a big boost yesterday alone. The latest from Marketplace's Steve Henn.
Robert Ben-Moshe took over the helm of AIG earlier this month. One of his first moves was to try and make peace with Hank Greenberg. Greenberg is AIG's controversial founder, former CEO, and is still the company's largest private shareholder. In 2005, he was pushed out of AIG amid allegations of accounting fraud, and earlier this month, he paid the SEC a multi-million-dollar fine. Still, over the last few years, Greenberg has been a fierce critic of the company and its executives. But new CEO Ben-Moshe isn't treating Hank Greenberg like a toxic asset. Ben-Moshe told reporters that despite Greenberg's problems, he can still, quote, help with the solutions. Many investors believe the détente could help AIG attract new sources of private capital. The hobbled insurance giant still owes the federal government more than $180 billion. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
American Public Media presents the Scratchpad blog. Host Scott Jagow keeps you updated on business news worth talking about. Available daily at marketplace.org.
Musicians used to think selling songs to commercials was pure sacrilege. But changes in the record industry have many artists reconsidering the ultimate sin. Reporter Raphael Cohen has more.
Greg Weeks has a big deadline coming up. He's the guitarist and singer in an indie band from Philadelphia called Espers. The band's releasing a new album in October. What they've got sounds pretty good, but Weeks says there's a lot missing.
Brooke has her guitar part to put down, and has her cello.
There are no vocals yet either, but the band might not need them for the album to start making money. Esper's plans to mix an instrumental version, not for fans, but for advertisers.
There's a trend in advertising to use pre-recorded music.
Dawn Sutter-Maydell co-owns Agoraphone. It's a music supervision company. She helps place songs in TV shows, movies, and ads. She says advertisers like instrumental versions of songs because they feel more hip and authentic than jingles. Maydell says when she started in the business, getting this kind of music from bands was nearly impossible.
It was a stigma 10 years ago that bands were really unwilling to license their music and to have it be associated with a product.
Today, bands like Seattle's The Postal Service have boosted their exposure by licensing songs to companies like UPS.
It's not customer service, it's your customer service.
Maydell says more musicians are getting used to the idea that their music could be used in ads. Some are even embracing it.
I think that there are some bands that write music with licensing in mind, and I think that there are bands that continue to do their art, and sometimes it works out.
Advertisers can pay in the six figures for an established band's song. An indie band like Esper's might get between $20,000 and $60,000. But aren't these bands selling out? Week says there are some companies he wouldn't want using his music, but he doesn't seem too fussy.
You know, hey, if I get, you know, $100,000 to promote a tampon ad, tampons are used by everybody. They're good. So why should I have a problem with that?
That's a question a lot of musicians are asking themselves. Record sales have been falling since 2004. So for most bands, selling a song to an advertiser might be the difference between rocking full-time and having to work a day job. In New York, I'm Raphael Cohen for Marketplace.
Finally, if you choose to cheat the tax man, best you don't talk about your cash flow on Facebook. The Wall Street Journal reports tax agencies are increasingly going after deadbeats on social networking sites. One Nebraska DJ who owed tax agents $2,000 got busted for boasting online about a party he spun records for. And in Minnesota, a guy had to pay up after he advertised on MySpace he was returning to his hometown to get into real estate. There are ethics rules. Most agents can't do any so-called friending. What they're finding online is available for anyone to see. They'll have to wade through profile updates such as "the pot roast is burnt" or "I saw Elvis in a bathroom in Wichita." I haven't posted that one in a while. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being here. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.